Hello there, ladies and gents. Welcome to Chris Abalo's podcast experiment. I am Chris Abalo. This is already episode number 13, lucky 13. And as promised, there's a guest, but we'll get to that later. Also, just a heads up, this will be an explicit episode since the conversation with me and my guest Ben Mills did get a little blue, not too much, but we do a bit of cursing. So as a result, this episode is explicit, and if I choose to curse in my monologue, then fuck it. So I do want to address a few items first, and this one's about a week old, but it still needs to be talked about. That would be the amazing job Jimmy Kimmel did pointing out how stupid we are with his video where the girl who's twerking, I hate even using that word, but the girl who's twerking who then falls and catches fire. And it turns out it's something he was behind to put up to show just pretty much how stupid we are and how the stupidest things will capture everyone's attention and the videos themselves will, in fact, catch fire to a certain degree. So I love that he pointed that out and just did it as something very subtle. It wasn't promoted as far as, hey, check out this video. It's something that kind of people discovered organically through sharing or people saying, oh my God, did you check out this video? I have to give him a huge amount of credit for that. So congratulations, Jimmy Kimmel. You've pointed out how stupid we are in, at least in America, possibly elsewhere, because YouTube is all over the place, but bravo. Now moving on to other news, and this is news I'm involved in, so it's the best kind of news. We are winding down year three of The Only Podcast That Matters. So this Friday on theonlypodcast.com and all the other podcasting resources where you can find the show, we'll be having Annual Cast, where we take a look back at the year and talk about some highlights and developments and all the different things. It's where we take an hour to look back and just kind of not congratulate ourselves, but look at where we've been and talk a little bit about where we're going. I will be on the show in some capacity. Not sure how we're going to do it yet because we'll be recording it in the next day or two. But I will be on the show with Andrew, Jack, and Ryan, and we'll see how that goes. So make sure you check out the show on Friday, especially if you've kept up and listened to The Only Podcast That Matters this year. We'll be talking a lot about, well, I'm guessing, we'll be talking about our favorite stuff and where the show has progressed over this past year and where it's going to be going starting next month when year four kicks off in October. And I am really excited about the fourth year of the show because I was actually talking to Ryan on the phone. Here's a rarity. I was talking to my dear friend Ryan Taggart, who never talks on the phone to anybody, especially guys. But we were on the phone for 3.5 hours, basically catching up, because he never, as I said, talks to anybody on the phone. But just through texting and all that, there's only so much that can be said. And with stuff that's going on with him and stuff that's going on with me, it just seemed right that we should catch up. And I had a day free anyway, because that was pretty funny. I went out for the day last week because every apartment in my complex was getting sprayed for bugs. So it was actually really funny when I came home. After spending the day out, because I just figured you need to be out for like 2 or 3 hours to let the vapors settle or whatever after they spray your place. So I figured, let me just go out for the day and I'll come back that night. But it was actually funny when I came home because there were a bunch of bug corpses laying around. It was like Joe's apartment gone wrong. Does anybody else remember that? It's from when MTV actually made good things, even though a debate can be made that Joe's apartment was not that good. But I liked it anyway. So it was funny to see all the little bastards that tried to escape, but ended up just dying belly up on my kitchen floor. It did make me laugh. I had to clean up about 7 bug corpses when I got home. But you know what? The day was even better earlier when I did talk to Ryan Taggart on the phone for about 3.5 hours and just kicking around ideas for some stuff we're going to do in the upcoming year on the show. And of course, just catching up personally. So big doings happening over at theonlypodcast.com and on The Only Podcast That Matters. So if for some reason you haven't, if you haven't done it for that show or this show, go to iTunes, subscribe, give the shows 5 stars, write a little review, and of course, always visit the homes at theonlypodcast.com and chrisabalo.com. The Only Podcast That Matters is also available on Stitcher, Beyond Pod, BlackBerry Podcasts, and a whole bunch of other ones. All those links are on theonlypodcast.com, but if you have a podcasting app, chances are you're going to find us on it. And hey, I'm going to be on the show this Friday, so all the more reason you should be listening to it. All right, as promised, I have a guest this week. After a long stint where it was just me yakking in your ear for half hour to an hour, depending on how much I had to say, I was able to get together with my friend Ben Mills, who we actually met doing some voiceover shenanigans, and he's a big cartoon fan like I am, and found voiceover to be kind of a step in that direction. So fortunately, we crossed paths, and we tend to be we were kind of the goofballs when we got together to do the work we were supposed to be doing. He and I would joke around a lot and dip into our cartoon impressions, which we'll talk a little bit about on the show itself. And we do jump topics quite a bit, hence the title of this show, Verbal Hopscotch, because we start on voiceover and move to cartoons and move to movies and all that. So we cover a variety of subjects, but it all starts with doing voiceover, being a fan of cartoons, and the artists who are true voiceover artists, the voice actors who we grew up loving, and all the stuff we enjoy as full-grown adults, at least physically. So it's a great conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. But before we get to that, let me give you my recommendation for this week. I have not been able to stop playing the three singles from Nick Borg's Homeland, which nothing to do with the TV show. It's a band from Sweden. Nick Borg is the frontman for the Backyard Babies, a band I've been a fan of for about the last 12 years or so. And he's done three solo outings so far. And I just got turned on to, because I follow Backyard Babies on Facebook, they posted a video for his new single, Borrowed Feathers, and I've been playing it like crazy. It's such a great song. It's definitely more bombastic than Backyard Babies, which is more straight-ahead garage rock. But Borrowed Feathers and his single from before that, Making Out with Chaos, and his other single, End of the Rainbow, so good. I've been playing them like crazy. The albums are available digitally in the U.S., so if you go to iTunes or Amazon, check out some samples from Nick Borg Homeland. The album is called Ruins of a Riot, but so good. Just been playing the three songs over and over again. I am going to order the CD from an international distributor, of course, because I'm a lunatic. So rather than buy it digitally, I've just been streaming the songs over and over again. But I'm definitely picking up the album. And if you dig rock music, and of course, if you already know who the Backyard Babies are, you owe it to yourself to check out Nick Borg Homeland, Ruins of a Riot. All right, no Only in Los Angeles moment this week, because I didn't notice anything, and I was too stupid to ask Ben if he was aware of anything or to bring something in. So sorry about that, but hey, good news. We're going to get to the chat right now. You okay?
I'm good.
Okay, feel free to giggle or whatever.
Alright.
This isn't a professional thing. It's done in an empty room, for crying out loud.
I'm just a guest in your home.
Alright, everybody. I'm sitting here with Ben Mills.
Hi, everybody.
Who we actually met about a year ago.
Yeah, a year and a half ago, maybe?
I'm trying to think. I think it was October.
Yeah,
so just about a year ago.
Yeah, way back in 2012.
I remember
dragons roamed the earth.
But there was an election. Oh, actually, it was.
It was. Yeah.
The day we met was the
Obama
day
got reelected.
The election last year. Okay, so it was November last year.
Yes.
And it was in a voiceover scenario.
Yes.
And we both have a tremendous affection for cartoons.
Absolutely, and, which would get us in trouble.
And smartassery.
Yeah, smartassery.
And that would get us in trouble.
General
too.
Smartassery and shenanigans.
Yes.
And general ribaldry.
Oh, ribaldry.
That's a new one, huh?
That is good, actually. So I like that you're already bringing the intellect into the show.
You're welcome, Chris.
Thank you. I'm happy to have some diversity and some intelligence on the show.
Man, I know you're right. You need more diversity on the show.
Nope, better way to drive it home. By going ethnic with your voices.
than a very slightly racist
Yeah, than just an incredibly stereotypical voice.
No, sorry. Yeah. Nothing wrong with it, just saying, you know.
Yeah. So, I've been over it 1,000 times on my own anyway, but what drew you to the voiceover thing in the first place?
Oh, just, born and raised on cartoons, you know. I feel like we're really fortunate in having kind of grown up in this second golden age of animation, you know, kind of like when all the Disney stuff came back and, you know, Little Mermaid and, Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and, you know, this really good resurgence of not just animation, but good writing and good voices.
I think a lot of that was we grew up with something that doesn't exist anymore, Saturday morning cartoons.
Absolutely, we are the last wave of that, absolutely.
And primetime animation.
Yes.
So now you have two completely different classes of shows, in as much as Saturday morning cartoons were for kids, mm-hmm. and primetime animation was more or less for adults.
Yes. Even the Flintstones back in the day was a little more, you know, because that was obviously a parody of, you know, the Honeyboos.
Of the Honeyboos, yeah. And it was supposed to be a sitcom.
And so, it's always been geared to, you know, even Rocky and Bullwinkle back in the day. It's just like kids aren't going to get the Cold War references, yeah. You know?
So, they just think the accents are funny.
That's right. And then there's a talking moose and a flying squirrel, and they're along for the ride, you know. But,
See, Rook.
Oh, boy. Pull a rabbit out of my hat. You probably do it. You did it. Yeah, it's a pretty good Bullwinkle, actually.
Was it? Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Hokey smoked. Okay. No one can do June Foray.
That's true.
Yeah. Only June Foray. But who
maybe Nancy Cartwright.
Maybe Nancy Cartwright. Who's very sweet, by the way. I met her once.
Did you?
Yes. Very, very sweet. And, I mean, it's so sweet because she had no hesitation pulling out the Bart voice. Like, right out. I mean, it's because we had this moment of like, oh, I know who you are. And she's like, oh, I know who you am. and so she just, you know, hey, man, how are you? You know? And it's like, and of course, I'm just there going,
when you have that level of notoriety, at least with regard to a character.
Yeah.
I think there has to be a point where you just own it.
Absolutely. I mean, you are essentially that character at that point, too. You know, it's just like, regardless of how good the writing is or, you know, whatever, like, you know, Matt Groening and the animation team did, is like, that character does not have legs if it does not have Nancy's voice attached to it. And that can also tie in into why that they demand such outrageous raises sometimes.
Because they can.
And I can definitely agree to with that to a degree, but, you know, it's that's a whole other kettle of fish.
It is, in fact. But yeah, cartoons.
So. Yes. I love cartoons. But no, I mean, you know, I think a big component of it was my mom, and to a greater extent, my grandfather. They had a really good appreciation, strong appreciation of cartoons. Like, my mom and my grandpa would always watch, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle or Snagglepuss, and, you know, because that was such an essential part of her upbringing, it kind of transferred to me. And, you know, she would sit down with me and, you know, like, no, you need to watch Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck on Saturday mornings because...
Yeah,
it's
this is just important.
It's part of the American experience. It really is. And
oh, that's the good stuff.
And
too.
You know, and so that to a greater extent made me want to be a writer and an artist. And, you know, I mean, I've always tried to keep that stuff in pace. And, you know, that's kind of why I was out here in the first place. But then, always at the back of my head is like, I would always do these crazy voices, to, you know, to make my mom laugh or make you know make my friends in school laugh.
Didn't we all?
And I mean, at an early age, you kind of find out, especially if you're reading the credits, it's like, Rob Paulson, Maurice LaMarche, Jim Cummings. This is like, you mean they get paid to do that?
Yeah, I keep seeing these.
They get
names.
Paid to do that? It's just like, I do that in the shower for free.
That's a job.
Yeah, that's a job. You know.
I do this all the time just for fun.
I know.
How does one do
Where's
that?
My residual check? But
how do I get cast?
Yeah, but
where's
then,
my agent?
Yeah, exactly. But then you do realize that it really is, you know, it is acting, legitimate acting, and there's a craft to it and an artistry. And the reason they are where they are is because they do it very, very well. And they put in their time and their, you know, their effort to
it truly is a talent-based
it is.
Area of work. It's not just you can't, because if you were the nephew of someone at Cartoon Network, it doesn't mean you're going to get cast.
No, absolutely.
So there is kind of it sounds kind of pompous, I think, but there is a purity to it where, no, you have to be talented.
Yeah.
Not so much with acting on screen, and I have nothing against, obviously,
screen actors,
but there is a difference where with voiceover and with cartoon and character voices, you do need to have that ability. I mean, the argument can be made where celebrities come in for a lot of movies and they don't necessarily put on a voice, they're there to do their voice, but that's fine because Chris Rock has that voice.
Yeah.
So when they want him, that makes sense. But if that means a movie gets greenlit in the first place and other voice actors get to do voices as a result, that's one thing. But overall, you really do need to have talent. You need to literally be able to step up to a mic and
unlike
spend gold.
Unlike Chris Rock, who has one voice, only one vocal profile.
Yes.
If it's not a project that does not have that voice or is reliant on it, he's not going to get that job. You know, you need versatility. You can't have this like, oh, I've got a great, you know, Mickey Mouse. And it's like, well, that's great, but they have a Mickey Mouse already.
Yeah.
And if that's the only voice you have, then, well, chances are you got to wait along for a while or murder the current Mickey Mouse to get that job, because otherwise it's not going to happen.
You know what's interesting, actually? And I only found this out, I should say from the horse's mouth. Speaking of having only one voice, the first person to get cast for Toy Story for voiceover. Do you know who this is or not? It's not like bizarre trivia.
John Ratzenberger?
No. Actually, it was Penn Jillette. Because he does the voiceover bit for the Buzz Lightyear commercial. Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Oh, really?
Because they wanted that kind of strong, loud, powerful voice and kind of raspy voice that sounds like that type of commercial.
Well, that sounds very odd because Penn Jillette's not loud at all.
Yeah.
Who thought of him? Penn Jillette, the master of subtlety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
He's kind of mousy.
He's the real nuance behind Penn and Teller, really.
But they called him because... Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they want.
It's a hook.
So
it's
sometimes,
his hook.
Yeah. Sometimes it does kind of work to someone's advantage when you have a distinctive voice, but it's not like you're necessarily going to make a career doing some kind of voiceover.
Yeah.
So it really is a talent. The more I've paid attention to it, and I'm sure you found the same thing. It really is. It's something you need to be able to do, and you need to have kind of a catalog of pitches and accents.
And ultimately, you're getting hired for you, for your own particular wheelhouse. I mean, you know, I can do a, a great, little kid voice like this too, but no one else can really sound like this when I'm selling you a new Lexus, the name and ultimate luxury, or anything like that. Cause no one else sounds like Benny Mills, So it's like, I can, by extension, if they need me, like, hey, can you do John Cleese mixed with Sylvester? And I'm just like, well, I could probably try that, but you only get in the door having established yourself as you.
Right, by having a set of tools that you've proven.
Yeah, yeah. And then, in between takes or whatever, too, is just joking around, which, of course, is a concept completely unfamiliar to you and I, especially if we're in the same room.
Yeah, that's trouble.
And then that's where, the real kind of aha moments kind of happen.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of ahas, this is a funny experience that we recently had. We went in to do a read for a commercial, and basically Ben was the helpful clerk and I was the snotty customer.
Yeah, so it was a UPS spot.
We read through it and it sounded good, but we were kind of getting direction to try different things. More so me than you. I need to sound more snotty, which some people listening, especially they've heard me in the past, are just like, is that possible? Yes, I got direction to sound more obnoxious. And using my own voice,
didn't have any problem at all.
Yeah. Well, you just had to sound, you had to be polite and helpful and agreeable. That was the clerk's role, was just to be like, yeah, you can do that. Yep, that's it. Mm-hmm. Not that I couldn't do it, but all of a sudden it was, let's switch it around.
Yeah.
And then I did a read as the clerk, and you did a read as the annoying customer, and we did it in one take, and that was it. It was done.
One take. Yeah.
It was so weird.
Yeah, case done. Good.
Yeah. It was strange to kind of be
on
that side.
And we both
kind of
just like, wow, okay.
Yeah. We heard it back. We thought, wow, that does work better, doesn't it? So it's really interesting that we were brought in with this spot in mind.
And of course, no competitiveness or antagonism at all with that, too.
No, not at all.
It's like, yeah, why not? Because it's just fun. I mean, again, it's just like, we're basically doing what we got to do when we were getting thrown out of class in middle school.
Oh, I did a lot of time standing in the hall.
Oh, yes.
Like every class clown did. Yeah. every little smartass who disrupted class.
And look at us now.
Yeah, look at us now. We're on the internet for free.
That's right.
But it's funny, though, kind of doing even just the voiceover thing, because it was recommended to me just having done podcasting and all that. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I apologize to people who have heard this from me a bunch of times already, but for the sake of continuity within the conversation, since I've been doing the podcasting thing and since people have always been complimentary with my voice and said, oh, you should do radio, you should be a sportscaster, all this other stuff. And just from doing character voices and because I imitate all my friends, it's just kind of it's out of affection. It's not in a mocking way. And they know it too, but I can't get under the skin with it. And just even imitating various characters, my mother always said, I think that'd be the best job for you. And I'm like, whatever. Because I don't want my mother to be right.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm a teenager. It's like, why the hell? Like, whatever you say, Bob.
Yeah.
I know everything. I'm 17. But at some point it was, since I was comfortable getting behind the mic too, like especially just having done podcasting and kind of being myself and not trying to sound any other way.
Yeah.
Just to honestly be authentic, which is really, I think, all you can aspire to be, especially doing something like this, like what we're doing right now.
Exactly.
And I thought, well, let me go for this. And it was really the first time when I had to stand in front of a director and actually get direction on how to perform. Because a lot of things I had done just with friends, and it was kind of, I'd written it, so I knew what I had to do. So there wasn't anybody who wasn't me telling me how to do something. So it was interesting.
There's no
objective
opinion.
Yeah, and I was like, I have to perform? Mm-hmm. You want me to sound like what? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's fun, like with the voiceover things, like sound like Don Pardo. It's Saturday Night Live, yes. Or
Fred Armisen.
Yes, or dip into the Don LaFontaine in a world kind of voice, yes. which everybody does.
By the way, have you seen that movie yet, Lake Bell's In a World?
I want to see it, and I've heard good things, but you apparently were not a fan.
I was not. I was heartbroken that it was not as good as I mean.
Did you make it through? Or did you walk out?
It's one of the few movies I walked out of.
Really?
I mean, and it's not to say that the concept is bad or everyone in it is awful, because they're not. I mean, Rob Corddry is great, and mm-hmm. you know, I loved Ken Marino. It's so arch and broad. I mean, I've seen more nuance in a Gilly sketch on SNL, unfortunately. And I really don't want to badmouth Lake Bell or, you know, her efforts or whatever. Because I'm sure, you know, she put her heart and soul into this. And, you know, I don't really want to denigrate it. But it just was not my cup of tea. It was really, really hard to get through.
Was it just generic? I mean, in your opinion, did it just feel like, I can't get behind
it. If you mixed a soap opera with every awful, stereotypical indie movie trope you've ever seen.
Oh, okay.
I mean, her and her father character in the film is just, I mean, Archie Bunker had more nuance. I mean, and more depth and more, you know, he was just bad-mouthing her at every turn. And
that's
like,
just
a woman can't be in this in voiceover because it's a man's business. And I do want to make a point to say that it's not. I didn't like the movie because it was a female-centric movie about like it's so hard to be in the voiceover industry as a woman, and I'm agree with that point of view too, that it's that prejudice does exist to some degree, but you know, like look at Tress MacNeille or Nancy Cartwright or, you know, Jennifer Hale. It's just like they are making a shit ton of money.
Oh yeah, and they've been doing it for ages.
And ages, and they are highly esteemed in the community too. And granted, voiceover is still predominantly, I'd say, a male. There are more men voiceover artists than girls, but I mean, I don't really think so anymore. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a hot button issue anymore. And that's what was kind of like, well, this might have been more interesting maybe 10 years ago.
Where you felt like there was less balance?
Or even maybe like 15, 20 years ago.
Before there were more indie movie cliches.
Yeah. Before every movie had to be, it was the summer that a boy became a man, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And it's like, ugh, just, and I mean, I really wish everyone who worked in that movie well, and I hope they do okay, mm-hmm. but it was not my cup of tea. I was disappointed.
I want to see the movie, I have to say. I will. Yeah. It's only playing, I mean, granted, we live in Los Angeles. Of course, it's playing here. Mm-hmm. It's playing at a couple of small theaters nearby. Mm-hmm. But I will see it at some point, even if I don't catch it in the theater. Yeah. And I am curious. And I at least, not that I'm going to go see every movie that somebody writes, directs, and stars in.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate when somebody pours that much of themselves into it.
Yeah.
In as much as you're really, I mean, you're wearing a lot of different hats and you're literally carrying the movie, because
absolutely.
if it's great...
For better or for worse, you know, that is...
If it sucks, it's, oh, the director couldn't do it. Or in her case, it would be...
It's just
the writing.
I feel like she tried to cover too many bases. That's really...
Honestly, oh, really?
I mean, and she's a great... Her vocal performances are great in it, too.
Oh, yeah, the trailer. And, I was laughing,
oh, the
honestly.
Trailer's, the trailer's great.
I was like, this looks
great,
hilarious.
But I don't know. It just hit me the wrong way. This really did.
I got you.
But Comic Book the Movie, that's a good a good voiceover movie.
I've been sitting on that for ages. It's one of the 260 titles in my Netflix queue right now. And I keep telling myself I need to watch it because, I mean, it's funny how there's so few people who, or at least so few that I'm aware of. I'm sure there are many. But so few people who are able to exist in both the voiceover and the on-screen acting world.
Yes.
I mean, off the top of my head, it's certainly Mark Hamill, who still works in live-action movies plenty.
And will be working in Episode 7, hopefully.
Supposedly. That's fine. I don't mind that Star Wars hasn't been... that we don't have thousands of details about Star Wars like we do see the Avengers sequel and all that. So I'm fine with that as of now. But him and Phil LaMarr and...
Yes. Even John DiMaggio, too. Like, he was on...
He was just on The Newsroom, yeah.
He was on Newsroom, yeah.
Which
yeah.
I
haven't
seen
an episode. And he had a spot on Modern Family, too. He was great.
He got, did he really?
Yeah, he got punched by Sofia Vergara.
Oh, I would let Sofia Vergara punch me.
He must have hated. He must have absolutely hated.
I wouldn't care. I'd let her punch me. For free. I mean, he was there and getting paid for it.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. I had nothing to follow
I'm
that
not, Yeah, I'm not being a pig about it. Like, let's be honest. Like,
hey, Johnny D, also from Jersey, by the way.
He is, yeah. I would really like to get him on the show, but he's so damn busy.
Yes, yes.
He really is. I mean,
and now going back to that, I know that voice, his movie.
I want to see that so badly.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be great.
I wish it's just it's been in production for ages.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's finally on DVD, and he has it with him at a lot of these conventions.
Oh, cool.
He's attending.
I thought it was going to be like video on demand or something.
I was hoping at this point it would have been, because if it was, if you could rent it on Amazon for $10 for like a 24, 48 hour rental, I would, because I want to see the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just outright buy the DVD anyway, because a movie like that, more often than not, you will just have to buy it if you
especially
want to see
for
it.
Us, it's just like that. No, that's something we need in our collection.
Oh, you know? Definitely. You know, and also considering the people who are in it, I'm absolutely fascinated by everyone who's in it. There are only two people who declined to be in it out of everybody, actually.
Really?
The aforementioned Tress McNeil and Frank Welker.
Of course,
are the only
Frank.
Two people who turned them down.
Frank,
they
come
just,
on.
The two of them have been doing it for decades, and they live for the work. They're not looking for the credit.
Yeah.
Which
well, I've heard. I mean, I'm sure you're also aware of Rob Paulson's Talking Tunes
podcast. Oh yeah, love that
too.
Show.
And he's always tried to get Frank and Tress on the show too.
Yeah, yeah.
But Frank, I mean, Tress, I can, you know, I would of course love to hear too. And I could tell maybe that she is a workaholic and she just wants to, you know, avoid that kind of excessive exposure.
Which
but Frank,
I guess.
But Frank, I've heard, like, and Rob will tell you this right away too, is just like, he's just so self-effacing and it's like, oh, you know, I don't think anyone's going to care about, you know, what I have to say.
Right.
Like, you're Frank Welker.
Yeah, you've been doing Scooby-Doo for 50 years.
Since 1969.
Everybody wants to hear what you have to say. He's been Curious George for the last 10 years
or
so.
Yeah.
And all these characters.
I mean, even just, you know, the animal voices he does to like Abu and Aladdin. And,
yeah, he's able to do kind of those funny things. He does.
Yeah.
And he did that. He does a lot of that with Curious George, who also sounds kind of like a friendly nibbler from Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
He does that voice, too.
Yes.
And it would be great to hear from those people. We want to hear from them because we're fans.
Yeah.
But I guess when you're going into something, especially during an era when voiceover was voiceover and there wasn't going to be any notoriety attached to it, it was just going to be about the work. I guess they just come from a different place as far as, we don't need to do this, or that's not why I got into it, or I'm not looking for any kind of credit or have some
but
kind of public
profile.
But you think
about it, it's just like, you know, Mel Blanc wouldn't turn down an interview.
Oh, hell no. You know? Apparently, apparently in that documentary, they have footage
of Well,
of
they also
interviews.
Have Noel, his son, is in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, apparently they have exclusive stuff, like interviews with Mel Blanc. It may just be audio.
I'm sure.
Because I've heard about it for geez, almost 2 years now, this documentary, which is why I'm going nuts. I want to see it.
Yeah. But
you would...
And it's not even. I mean, going back to the thing was like, of course we want to hear from Frank and Tress because we're fans and, you know, we love their work, but I feel like they're doing a slight bit of disservice because it's like, no, we want. I mean, it's like denying to do Inside the Actor's Studio kind of. It's just like, no, teach us. We want to know.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
like, you know, what your craft is and like what's your process and how do you get into a character and what motivates you to do what you do.
Or even
I
just
mean,
your story.
How
did you get into doing this in the 60s?
Yeah. So it's like Frank. Frank's from Denver, Colorado. I'm from Colorado. It's just like how do you make the jump? How did you make the jump, Frank?
Yeah. At what point did you think, I'm going to start doing cartoons?
Yeah.
Like that's, I don't know. It'd be great. And none of these people, I imagine, will ever be keen to write autobiographies.
I know.
It would be great.
I know.
Oh, maybe some
maybe
more modern voice actors would or some actress. I mean, hey, Mark Hamill's would be fascinating, obviously.
Why I Kill by Mark Hamill.
Why so serious?
Yeah.
Oh, he was so good.
He's
so many people
were the best Joker.
Everyone was
of all
so
time.
Mad when he said he wasn't going to be doing the Joker anymore. Although I did like John DiMaggio's take.
I really liked him in that. Yeah, even Kevin Hood. Michael Richardson's take. I really liked him.
Yeah, honestly, in the Batman. There's so, because there's so many different versions of the Joker where.
Oh, yeah.
You can't.
But
just
still,
play
Mark's
it in
just
one
the
way.
Mark's just. I mean, as a comic book fan, it's the best interpretation of the Joker from the page.
Oh yeah, and it's great that he has that distinction. Like I said, he has a character he's known for.
Yeah,
I mean. He was lightly successful in films.
Yes.
And,
but I do love it, too. Like, as a diehard Star Wars fan, too, it's just like, I look at him first as the Joker, second as Luke Skywalker.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that shows how much of a tune head you are.
Yeah, that's right.
That explains a lot.
Don't believe me. I mean, I can quote IG-88 at the drop of a hat or, you know, tell you all about the Bantho or the insert Star Wars reference here.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't hate Star Wars. I'm just not a Star Wars fan.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Are you more of a Trek guy?
No.
Really?
No. I think they're both just goofy. I mean, listen, when Episode 7 comes out, I'm not going to be protesting outside the theater saying, down with the dark side. Sandra Bullock, most McCarthy movies forever.
There have been so many people picketing Star Wars movies.
Yeah, well, like, that's what I mean.
I hate the Sith. It's just like,
yeah.
I miss those people.
Down with the Sith. It's not that. I can't get into it. I've seen the movies. I saw the prequels as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy them. I enjoyed the original three Star Wars movies. I don't look at them as being religion like so many other people do.
No, I mean, I don't think of them as religion either, too. But it just affected me deeply in kind of the pop culture sense. Like, whoa. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was like a punch in the face to everybody who sat in a theater in, what, 1977 whenever it was when the movie came out.
But again, it's like we have so many, especially from our generation, too. It's just like, you know, we can drop in Indiana Jones or Aliens or Gremlins or Roger Rabbit. Or
we have
we've
grown up with what are essentially big budget B movies.
Yes, yes.
As mainstream blockbusters.
Yes. But considering especially now what's being put out, it's like they're really good.
Oh, totally.
Extremely good.
And look at something like Star Trek, for instance. I just look at that as being just so goofy and so melodramatic. I don't hate it. Yeah. I went and saw the new one. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, how does anybody take this seriously?
Did you see the second one this year?
That's what I mean. I went and saw that in the theater, and I thought, I mean, the lens flares need to stop. Yeah. Absolutely need to stop. But also because I love the big push for me. I love Simon Pegg, but wasn't reason enough for me to see the Mission Impossible or Star Trek movies. But I love Benedict Cumberbatch and Sherlock.
Yes.
So I said.
Who is rumored
to
be
villain,
in Episode 7, by the way.
Apparently, he dropped out of Guillermo del Toro's movie.
Yes.
To be in Episode 7, which would be interesting.
Yeah.
But it depends. See, that's what I mean. Just because of Star Wars, even some of my friends have said to me, like, you're not going to go see the new Star Wars movies? I said, if they look like good movies, I will go see them. But hearing, all right, they might be getting Benedict Cumberbatch, and they're looking at Leonardo DiCaprio. And
who's not
going to
be in it, by the way?
Oh, he's definitely not?
Probably not.
I mean, who knows at this stage? Like I said, Disney thankfully has been quiet about it because it's not going to be oversaturated. It will be in 2 years' time when the movie's been out.
Well, a year from now when they release the trailer, it'll be totally.
Oh, at next year's D23 Expo, it absolutely will be.
I will say that I was disappointed with this year's D23. They had nothing.
See,
I mean,
I'm
not
grateful.
And considering just how blatantly obvious it is too, is like if you're setting it 30 years after Return of the Jedi. After the last episode, it's like, of course, just admit, like, yeah, Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia and Han Solo are going to be in it. I mean, just give us that,
right?
You know,
it has been 30 years, and the story is going to happen 30 years later.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and that's all I wouldn't. I mean, I don't need a title yet or anything like that, too. But it's just like, come on, guys.
They confirmed the three of them would be back. At least that would be.
Instead of Star Wars. Oh, I don't know. You know, it's just like, come on, they're going to be in it.
Instead of the inconceivable lack of chemistry that Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen can we at least get people who we know work well together?
Yes, exactly. Just put Anthony Daniels in the suit again, that uncomfortable gold suit, and just have him and R2-D2 have some witty gay banter. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that is all we need. We need the golden homosexual, we need the big hairy guy, and that's the way Simon Pegg described him in his autobiography, which was brilliant.
When you're
talking about seeing Star Wars.
Yes.
Amazing. And get the audiobook. Mm-hmm. There's an amazing kind of parallel story. Every other chapter is his actual autobiography, but it begins with kind of a comic book style version of his life, which very closely parallels Star Wars.
Oh, cool.
And it includes him doing various voices and a bunch of, let's say, audio-specific gags. So I recommend that to you and anybody else who's mildly curious about Simon Pegg and who also has an interest in the stuff he does, be mm-hmm. it Star Trek or Star Wars or whatever.
Have you seen The World's End?
Oh, twice.
What'd you think? Oh, so you liked it. You really liked it.
I really liked it. You know what, though?
I enjoyed it. It was very sweet.
It had a more serious tone.
By the end of it, I'm kind of like, oh, my God.
Yeah, like, this is deep. Yeah. But I understand why it did, only because the subject matter it was dealing with look, this isn't going to be, like, spoilerific, folks, so mm-hmm. don't expect we're going to give too much away. But the movie kicks off with Gary, Simon Pegg's character, in an AA meeting, essentially.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The fact that he's an alcoholic does play into why he wants to do this pub crawl and everything mm-hmm. else. That's not too much of a shock. But it did dig it. Deeper issues, but the second time I saw it, it was even funnier, and that's been the case with me when it comes to Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz before it, mm-hmm. where I find them funnier every time I watch them. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ever saw those two movies, as entertained as I was, it was the least amount I was entertained by those movies because they kept getting better for me. Mm-hmm. And The World's End, just having gone and seen it a second time a few weeks ago with some friends, it was even better the second time, just because mm-hmm. I picked up on more of those nuances and more of these yeah. comedic moments and all that. So I know I'm just going to love it even more as time goes on.
Nice.
But tough for me to pick a favorite between Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz anyway.
Oh, yeah. I would have to go with Shaun of the Dead, though.
I think I may give Shaun of the Dead the edge just because yeah. I've loved it longer.
Yeah, yeah. But I just enjoyed all three of those Cornetto movies.
The Cornetto trilogy.
The Cornetto trilogy. That they are just the perfect combination of committing to two genres and just really committing to them and just not sacrificing conventions of either, and it just really works. It's like Ghostbusters in a way, like how Ghostbusters Ghostbusters is legitimate sci-fi horror and also a comedy
and hilarious, 100%
and 100%. And so like Shaun of the Dead is a true zombie horror movie that's also a comedy. Hot Fuzz is a buddy cop action movie, also comedy. And then this is a apocalyptic, reflective, end of the world movie that's also a comedy.
Yeah, it's a big chill with aliens.
Yeah, it's the big chill with aliens.
That's really what it is. It really is. And the interesting thing, though, the thing I love most about those guys is, first of all, the movies themselves are great. Mm-hmm. It's hard to not fall in love with those movies, yeah. but the fact that the comedy never takes you out of what's going on.
Like, no.
There are some very serious moments in Shaun of the Dead. Mm-hmm. Listen, folks, if you haven't seen it, please stop listening to this right now. I beseech thee.
Watch Do us a favor and kill yourself. If you haven't seen Shaun of the Dead, go outside.
It's been 9 years.
Plug three in your head. There you go. Continue.
But, when his mother is dying and all that, and he has uh-huh. to shoot her. And then yeah. when Liz dumps him in the beginning of the movie, it's just... You do feel bad. You don't look at it mm-hmm. as being schlocky or like, you know, no. this is so cheesy. Like they're yeah. trying to put drama in this hilarious movie, or the fact they're trying to put so much comedy into a horror movie. Mm-hmm. I love the way they're able to just blend that so yeah. well. They just mix the comedy in with anything.
I think it's because they realize that life is funny too. And you know, and it's like you have those moments, you know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, in the midst of like, you know, that's why, you know, you hear like stories about like guys like in World War II or, you know, battles and such like that, where they're actually joking while they're like, you know, storming the beaches at Normandy or something, because you can't help but, you know, that's the only way to diffuse the situation.
Yeah, you have to bring some kind of
you
levity
have to.
To it.
I mean, and that's just human nature. That's just, people are like that. That's what I always like about that is like, they've always seemed real to me. Like that's how, at least for people in my life, that's how people act.
Oh, definitely.
More so than, you know, any like, you know, I mean, and of course I love Wes Anderson, but as a, like in any, I mean, his movies are far more cartoony than Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion.
And not as overt when it comes to the comedy either.
Yeah.
It's not as much hit you over the head as a lot of the things are in Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, World's End.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what though? Those movies, I have to say, and The World's End was another one, even though initially, like I said, it was more serious and struck me as having more serious overtones than kind of overtly comedic like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those movies where at the end of it, I'm like, I want to go make a movie. I want to get my friends together and make a movie.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, God, like, because look what can be done.
Because Edgar, Simon, and Nick have done it.
Yeah. You know? Even though it's hard to do it as well as they do. It's still, at the end of it, I think, man, I really want to go make a movie. And mm-hmm. the fact that's like, man, this movie, I don't have $20 million at my disposal.
No.
Not even remotely that near that amount of money. But I think,
but you can
man,
do
if
it.
They can do
can
it.
Do
yeah.
It. Yeah.
That honestly, it's one of the things, when I look at that, it's something to aspire to when it comes to writing specifically, mm-hmm. because just the way they're able to nail everything and that they're able to always constantly refer back to different things early in the script. And there's a lot of those things I didn't pick up on at The World's End the first time mm-hmm. with, like for instance, when Simon Pegg's talking to Martin Freeman about, you know, we're going to do this pub crawl and all that. And then Simon Pegg's talking. And then Martin Freeman says, I don't remember what the exact line is, but, you know, I'm lost. And then Simon Pegg's like, don't be. And then fast forward to when they're doing the pub crawl, and it's the other way around. And Martin Freeman's saying something to Simon Pegg, and then Simon Pegg says, I'm lost. Martin Freeman says, don't be. Just the way they always have those things in there where it's just like, the other person's saying it, she's on the other foot now. This is hilarious. I just love the way they build those things in. Mm-hmm. Or even when it comes to just calling back to things within the movie. Oh, that's... Mm-hmm. That's so brilliant. I love when that happens because it just shows how much went into it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they really thought this out. They didn't just sit and write a bunch of jokes.
That's why I love the first run of Arrested Development so much, is that there was just, it was just littered with that.
Oh, yeah. You know? Constantly. Just, and I just got into Arrested Development the last few months, which I know I'm way behind.
Well, you can skip this current season on Netflix.
Really? I've heard mixed things about it.
There's three really good episodes in it. I just feel like they just try to pack way too much into what they had, and it gets overstuffed and muddled, and they don't let it breathe.
I think, considering what they've wanted to do, I mean, I haven't heard anything from any of the actors or the creator or the writers or anything concerning this, but I know that the goal initially was to
do a movie.
Get everybody back together, and make a movie. And I just feel like if they were going to flesh it out in a way where it's like character centric episodes, from what I understand, this new season, then at least they can flesh it out more. I haven't gotten that far yet. And frankly, it was one of my incentives. I kind of got on the bandwagon because I said, "Oh, I guess I just started watching Arrested Development now." But and it's one of those things I've noticed. I've done more and more where I will watch something on Netflix that I may not watch just because it's on Netflix, and I'm like, this looks good, but I'll get back to that later. But it seemed like, all right, if they're going to flesh something out, better to do that over the course of, I don't know how many episodes, let's say 13 episodes.
It was 13,
okay, at 20 minutes a piece, you're getting more stuffed into that as a story overall.
Yeah.
It's more of a full story than if you're trying to make an hour and 40-minute movie.
But if you have four different subplots going at the same time in addition to the main storyline, and you also have the narrator talking about events that are actually unfolding on the screen in sync with dialogue the characters are saying on screen as well.
Oh, okay.
It just becomes this cacophony of just, shut up!
Can we stick with one story, please?
Like, can someone just get hit with a Poppins? That's all I need to say! Jesus! But
I do need to catch up.
But I'm actually and that's why I'm still behind it in terms of them doing a movie, too, is because that will force them to be concise and then tie everything into 90 minutes. Because if you have, I really couldn't understand why people would have the capacity to binge watch this or like Breaking Bad, like how could you binge watch, all of this incredibly deep stuff in a 16-hour period.
Yeah, without coming out a lunatic. Oh,
yeah, I'm just like, you would lose your goddamn mind.
I know. I keep saying that, too, because I've yet to see a single frame, and I get crap for it all the time, I've yet to see a single frame of Breaking Bad. Or I know. Yeah, see, that's the reaction I get from everybody.
No.
But I know I'm going to have to.
I'm not going to belittle you, but you're a terrible person.
Apparently.
Terrible, awful person.
And you won't be the last one to say it. But it's one of those shows where I know, ever since DVD came out, I have basically been a binge watcher. I'll just buy a season. Mm-hmm. I won't so much watch it on broadcast
television. I can
understand.
I can agree with that.
So I have lost the ability to wait a week to find out what happens.
Yeah.
So I really am going to have to wait till the series is over and it's on Netflix and watch the entire, what's going to end up being essentially six seasons.
Yes.
All over the course of a week or 10 days or
2 weeks.
I'll
be like that with Game of Thrones. Like, I've never seen a full Game of Thrones episode. Never seen a full Newsroom episode.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, I'd be keen to pick up the season, or like Walking Dead, I haven't seen at all.
Yeah,
and
Walking Dead, zombie fatigue.
I've fatigue when it comes to zombies.
I had
pretty vampires.
No desire to see World War Z at all.
I had none either.
When they announced it, from when it was in theaters to when it left theaters, I'm like, still don't care.
You know what? For what it's worth, that's how big a star that Brad Pitt is. That every billboard. He had his back turned to it. You didn't have to see his face, and everyone's like, "Hey, Brad Pitt's in this movie."
Yeah.
But I just thought
featuring Brad Pitt's ass.
Yeah, there's I just can't do another movie with just zombies, especially zombies who can run faster than humans, no, and it's PG-13, and
yeah.
The unrated cut probably they just added a little CG blood and whatnot. Yeah. I can't do it, man. No. It's so much.
I was zombied out 3 years ago. Like the first season of Walking Dead, they should have just made Walking Dead for a one season run. They should have just done 13 episode miniseries. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Have Frank Darabont direct all 13 episodes. That's all you need.
I am very curious about Frank Darabont's new show, though. This kind of
So what is it? Lost Angels.
And actually, Simon Pegg is in the pilot as well.
Yeah, yes,
playing a serious role
as well as my favorite comedian Dana Gould has a
really
role in it. Yes.
When is that coming on?
I don't know.
You know what's funny? We're sitting next to a computer. I can just look it up, but I'm not
It's too much work. Too hard.
It's like, I got to take a hand off the mic to look something up. No way.
But it's not like on TNT, like either the end of this month or the beginning of October.
Okay. So it's this fall on cable.
Check your local guide
for listings. This fall on basic cable.
That's right.
Which is fine, because, I mean, TV has risen to a point where...
Well, TV is fun. So I mean, and that's what was so disheartening about going back to In a World, because... I mean, the night before, I had watched the previous episode of Breaking Bad, which was by far one of the most intense, not only just the most intense pieces of television, I would probably put it up there, was one of the best produced...
40 minutes of your life.
Well, not of my life, but certainly of pop culture within the last 20 years. I mean...
I could see that.
I mean, I would be looking at my friends and we watching it live, and we're just like, oh, we're going to have to watch Little Mermaid or something right now. It's
we need to lighten up. We need to even
out. Oh, my God. and then to just, and they cram all that into 40 minutes. 40 minutes. And it's just breathtaking. And, you know, you look at Mad Men or, you know, Game of Thrones or Newsroom, and you see all this great talent being poured into these shows, and then such fleeting glimpses of this on the big screen.
Yeah, it's that's kinda, the funny part. Yeah. Like all the, it seems to me, and now I don't watch a lot of TV, but it seems like the best writing is going to TV.
Absolutely, since 2-3 years ago. Yeah, TV's where all the talent is.
Yeah, because at your local Cineplex, you have Superheroes and Adam Sandler. Yeah. You have two choices.
Yeah.
And those are both of them.
And I will go see Superheroes.
Naturally. Yeah. But
Adam Sandler in Grown Ups 3, Grow Up Harder.
It's probably going to happen.
Good Lord.
Oof. Anyway, look, somebody out there likes it. I don't know who.
I know. It's who are these people? Can we put them in a cannon and blast them into the moon?
Dude, I went and saw The Heat. For the second time.
Which I enjoy quite a bit.
Oh, I hurt from laughing at that movie. I've been flying the flag for that movie since last year when I heard it was happening.
That cat took one look at you and said, no, thank you.
No fucking thanks, man. I'm out of here. Oh, man. They actually had trending on Twitter and Facebook this week. That cat is an asshole. Hashtag that cat is an asshole. And whoever's handling the social media for The Heat is brilliant. But anyway, that aside, because I've spent enough gushing...
That and the Northampton Clown.
I saw the trailer, though, for Grown Ups 2 before my sister and I saw The Heat. And everyone's laughing, and I'm thinking, you people can't be going from this. Having seen The Heat, I'm like, you can't go from this movie to that, can you?
No.
Like, fat guy lands on a little guy, and that gets big laughs?
They literally have to be working on another brain length that we have no...
There's something I'm missing.
No compatibility with.
I honestly wonder if... And look, Adam Sandler's way successful, and I'm sure he cares not an ounce about my opinion. And is a very nice guy, by the way. He did actually shop in the store I worked in a couple of years ago. He was very friendly and stopped, take photos to everybody. He was polite and shake hands, all that. I have nothing against the guy personally, but I would like to know if he's writing this just to make a
paycheck,
kind of safe, disposable hour and 40 minutes, and because he gets paid a lot of money to make these movies with his friends, or if he thinks what he's doing is actually really good. Because I can't help but think when you look at something like the work he's done, all the movies he's done, specifically in the last 10 years or so, if you're going to look back at the legacy of Adam Sandler, it's like he did a bunch of movies nobody watches anymore. But man, they went and saw him in the first 2 weeks they were in theaters. I mean, look, he's way successful, as I said, so I'm not putting him down. I'm just wondering if he thinks this is good, if he thinks the stuff he's doing is actually of such quality that's like, oh, I'm going to be remembered for this. Because that needs to... Yeah. I would think that plays a role in it in some point. I'm not going to look every episode of this podcast is.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
Is amazing and incredible, I mean, but I'm also not asking for $80 million to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like a nice, it's like a nice gastropub who makes a great burger, but somehow McDonald's is always going to be there.
Yeah.
It's always going to be making money.
That's what I regard movies like that. I was like, is it just fast food? You go in just because you know what you're going to get, and that's it? You're not looking for anything satisfying? You're just looking for kind of a fix?
Not even lasting satisfying. Just in
the moment.
Just literally 90 minutes, and then that's it.
Yeah, and then when the movie's over, you're like, huh, what happened again?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, getting back to the TV thing, because as I said, I no longer have the patience to wait, but I always find it weird, and it's been more pervasive lately, when people start talking about Walking Dead movie, Game of Thrones movie,
Kickstarter.
Arrested Development is different, in as much as I don't know, supposedly they're going to be doing another season, but I don't think it's a definite deal yet. But I don't feel like, not to say they couldn't make it work, but when you get, for something like Game of Thrones, which I've barely seen, but you get an hour of that every week for 3 months or 4 months, why would you want to go to a theater, pay $15, and sit through a 2.5 hour condensed standalone story when you get it episodic doses of it?
Yeah.
You get a much larger and more cohesive story over the course of 12 episodes. Yeah. Why would you want just a movie?
Yeah.
I think it's so weird that fans are now clamoring for these movies.
You're really going outside of the box and expanding the horizon of the original property, there's no reason to do a movie.
But I still can't see people going out to see it, though. That's the other side of it. I mean, look, it's probably not
going
to happen.
Well, I mean, like I would say, like a good example, the Simpsons movie. Obviously, they had many seasons under their belt.
Oh,
They were saying they were going to do that for years and years and years. And I will say, like, I was extremely excited for it, too, because, you know, at that time, it was under the impression that the show would end first, and then they would do the movie.
Right.
And,
or that a Simpsons movie at that point was, like, 15 years too late.
Yeah.
At the point when it came
out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and I will say, like I had seen some previs work that they had done and some early animatics and like test footage that they would show, like, Comic-Con and stuff, and they changed so much of that movie throughout the course of it. And you know they literally had 100 drafts of that script.
Wow.
They just kept doing it. But it's like they kept changing it so much at every single stage. It's like, you know, a joke is funny 29 times you hear it, but the 30th time you go like, meh, I'm getting kind of bored of that.
Or you write a better joke.
Often than not, especially in the Simpsons movie, they don't. I mean, it's weaker. And then they didn't really, I mean, the animation I felt they did a great job with, because it's like the show, but it's a bigger version. And they actually got a bunch of people who worked at Disney originally to come onto that.
Well, there you go.
And so that was pretty cool. And they did, you know, I was hoping they would do a PG-13 movie and, you know, they would maybe beef up the language and the darkness of it a little bit too. And a little bit of that. I think they could have gone more intense with that too. But it's just like you're just trying to cater to so many people all at once. You're just missing and just trying to please everybody. You're just missing the core base that you started with is why we wanted to see it in the first place.
True, but having said that, I thought the Simpsons movie was the best Simpsons product, period, in quite a few years.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, overall, considering...
The last really good Simpsons episode I saw, I forget which season it is, but it was like within the last 4 years or something, was they did a shot-for-shot parody of 24. And it was phenomenal.
I could see that being fun, but I almost feel like... and. I know, blasphemy, but, I'm sure, but I almost feel like that would be kind of to a degree out of the Family Guy playbook, where it's let's take something that exists and adapt it to make it fit. Like, we're gonna start our own A-team or whatever it is.
But they also did that a little bit, too, with, like, you know, they made their own Frasier episode when they had Sideshow Bob's brother played by Dave Pierce.
That's funny, but that's kind of like a reference within the Simpsons world.
That's also very much a core Simpsons tenet too, is to be very self-referential and meta. It's like, and you know, like
totally.
like they did a Frasier title card on that episode saying Frasier is a sitcom that airs on NBC. Like they were really
right.
They're like we know what we're doing and what you're gonna say, so we're just gonna cop to it before you can.
Oh man, I don't know if you've heard this already, but this blew my mind, and I'm way excited for it. Mm-hmm. Since you brought up Frasier, did you hear that? I think you know what I'm talking about. Kelsey Grammer's in Expendables 3.
I think that's a great choice.
That's amazing. Between him and Harrison Ford being added, I'm like, this is going to be incredible.
It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be everything I hope it will be. Because Expendables 2 was vastly superior to the first one.
I hadn't seen any of them yet, but now if they're getting everyone for this one, it's like, isn't Mel Gibson going to be in it too?
He's the bad guy.
Oh.
And he's huge. He's jacked. Like, there are photos of him online. His arm is the size of his head. His bicep. Dude's 57, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he looks great. Honestly, it's I'm excited
from all that work he did with the Beaver Puppet. That's kind of
dude. That was a really good movie.
Yeah, actually. It was.
I rented that. He was incredible. I would really like to see from we're topic jumping like crazy, in this, but that's okay. It's very, very much
Ben and Chris <it's>, rant.
That's exactly what it's all about. I would really love to see. I realize Mel Gibson is never going to 100% recover when it comes to the public's opinion about him.
Yes.
But I would love to see him. With Machete Kills looks hilarious, and I love the first one, and I like that he's playing just this bad guy, and he's playing a bad guy in The Expendables. I would really like to see him come back as everybody sees him more for his talent than for his personal demons, which obviously there's a lot more stuff going on, which frankly there probably is with plenty of people at a certain level of success and also who've battled addiction the way he has.
Absolutely.
He's been an alcoholic for ages, but it would be great to see him come back in the way that after everyone kind of wrote off Tom Cruise, then he shows up in Tropic Thunder, everybody falls in love with him again, and now he's doing 3 movies a year.
Yeah.
So it would
as
be great
if
to see
nothing
that
had happened.
Right. Yeah. It'd be great to see that happen to Mel Gibson because we know the dude's talented. He can direct. He can act his ass off. The dude, it would be a shame to see him not do anything else again. Yeah. And I thought The Beaver's great. I thought Get the Gringo was really good. There's another one for your Netflix queue if you haven't seen it. Did you see Payback?
I have not seen Payback.
Oh, man, you're missing theirs, too. Right. See, you can hate me all you want for having not seen an episode of Breaking Bad. But I saw Mel Gibson movie in 1999.
I can hate you more.
Okay. And I've seen the first 2 Expendables. They're sitting right over there across from us. Those movies are great, and they're completely aware of what they are.
I'm sure.
They know they are lunkhead action movies. I don't want to say lowest common denominator, but they don't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
They're very, I don't want to say self-aware, where they're not kind of like winking at the audience, but there are enough kind of references to their
catalogs. We'll play your game.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And it's perfect, and it works so well, and it's good just to see those guys working, period.
That is, yeah, absolutely.
It's really cool to see people like that. Guys who are talented in their own right. I mean, it's
always
a shame.
Like Kelsey Grammer's Beast, by the way. The one good thing about X3...
Yeah, I have to agree, actually. You know, I don't hate X3 as much as people do.
I do.
Okay, well, I'm also not a comic guy, so I went into it just kind of completely fresh. Right. But just as a movie, I don't hate it as much. I feel like the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie was way worse of a movie than X3.
Absolutely. Okay. I will agree with you there.
All right, good, because that's one people are just like, no, X3 was terrible. But anyway, I really thought he was one of the great parts. And it's a shame that kind of that's not going to be revisited because in the X-Men movie that comes out next year, I forget who's going to play Beast now. Totally drawing a blank, but that Kelsey Grammer as Beast is not going to happen anymore.
Yeah. Well, are they using the guy from First Class?
Probably.
He was good. He was good in that. First Class was actually a really good X-Men movie.
It was incredible. Yeah. Movie. That was... Yeah. That's for me is just right below X2.
Yes.
It was incredibly well
balanced.
First Class,
I
was all in for that movie. Oh, it was amazing. Yes. It's a shame, too, that Nightcrawler seems to have gone by the wayside despite being great in X2. And then no more Beasts. So I guess James Cameron just ruined blue characters in movies in 2009. We all know why.
Well, I have my own choice words for James Cameron, but that's for another podcast.
No, let's hear him right now, actually. I'm very curious. Because I walked out of Avatar. You want to talk about
really?
Movies? Yes. Okay. You want to talk about movies that I've walked out of. And I've walked out of that. My friend twisted my arm to go see this really stupid movie in 2001, maybe 2002. It's a movie called Crazy Beautiful with Kirsten Dunst and Latin heartthrob.
I'm very vaguely familiar with that.
I barely remember anything, but I sat there for a half hour and I said, this fucking sucks. I'm getting out of here. And
it's just that...
I said, I'm leaving. I was like, you could finish watching the movie and I'll come back and meet up with you later. But he walked out
Just that sickening feeling, and it's like you're all squirmy, and just it's just like I cannot take it anymore. It's
you know what?
Awful. And I hadn't had that feeling forever, and I'm just kind of like, oh my god, this is awful.
I wanted to walk out of. I've told the story before, but I wanted to walk out of a bringing down the house, the awful Steve Martin Queen Latifah movie, which I didn't. Now I didn't pay to go see it. Let me just say that.
Well, that's
my
good.
Friend
that's,
worked
that's
at the movie theater, so I wasn't stupid enough to actually pay to see this movie. But I went with a friend of mine, and for some reason, I was under the impression she was enjoying it. After the movie was over, we both hated it, and she was under the impression that I was enjoying it. And I'm thinking, but I don't know where either of us got that impression of the other one, because neither one of us laughed the whole movie. For some reason, we stuck it out, but I so badly wanted to walk out of that movie after about 5 seconds, despite Betty White being slightly racist character. But Betty White's amusing. Great and everything. Yeah, it is amusing. It's just like, oh, you silly racist old lady. Anyway, Avatar, I only went to. Now, here's the funny story I have with Avatar, and then we'll get to your words for James Cameron, because I'd like your take on this. Right. And the chance my friends are listening, we'll see whether or not someone else agrees your perspective about my poor decision-making when it came to Avatar. Everybody was going, I'm sure you remember, everybody was going on and on and on and on about Avatar, how amazing it was, great movie, you have to go see it, you have to see it, you have to see it. One of my friends who was very insistent on you have to go see Avatar, because that came out in December, that Christmas gave me a gift card for the movie theater. I said, I will use this to go see Avatar.
That is so funny, because that's exactly the same circumstance that really? I had seen it. I did not pay to see Avatar.
Yeah, see, I didn't either. Now, I went to, I was getting actually my car worked on, and I was close to the theater, so I thought, okay, I'll get my car repaired, and this movie's going to take it's going to be about 6 hours, so my car should be done by the time I get out of the movie. And I went and saw it in IMAX in 3D because I figured, all right, I want to give this movie a fair shake.
Full experience.
If I'm going to see it, let me go see it in the best presentation possible. So that way, and again, I wasn't paying for it, but that way I can be completely objective about it. I made it through an hour and I said, this movie's only an hour in. And I was like, as soon as he learned how to ride the bird dinosaurs, which maybe was a little more than an hour in, I was like, I'm out. I can't do this anymore. And I walked out, and I got so much crap for it, not only because I walked out of what everybody for about 6 weeks regarded as the greatest theatrical achievement in the history of man, but because I spent essentially someone else's money to see the movie. My friends felt I was obligated to sit through the entire movie,
Like, hey, we paid for you.
Yeah. Well, no, look, the friend who gave me the gift card didn't make me feel guilty at all. He just thought it was funny that I walked out. But some of my other friends was like, no, of course you should have stayed and seen the whole movie. It's like, you owe him that. And I said, no, I don't. Because if it was the circumstance was the opposite and they used the gift card, whether I recommended a movie or not, they went and saw a movie they didn't like, I wouldn't want them to be obligated to waste another 2 hours of their life sitting through the remainder of the movie. I would never ask somebody that. So I thought it was absolutely. I thought it was terrible. And at this point, the fact that they want to make three more movies,
yes,
I think it's over. I don't think anybody cares about Avatar. No. Pretty much after it left theaters and came on Blu-ray, weeks later, I think people stopped caring about how great Avatar was.
Well, did you also hear too that apparently Disney World is going to be adding a Avatar Land to Animal Kingdom?
We'll see.
And to hardly any fanfare whatsoever.
Yeah, well, because allegedly that's another one of the juggernauts for 2015, which we'll see. I don't think anyone's going to care in another 2 years. No, I don't think anybody wants to go back to Pandora.
No one. I mean, I don't. I mean, I was there once. I mean, yeah, the big reptilian, panther monster was cool. And, it was moderately fun to see, what Tarzan would be if he lived in the world of aliens and there's like dances with wolves and shit.
Pocahontas. I thought of when
totally
I watched the movie.
Pocahontas.
I was like, this movie is Pocahontas.
It's Pocahontas.
And without having any other reference for it, everyone just says it's a great movie, it's a great movie. Nobody said anything about it being Pocahontas. Mm-hmm. I'm watching the movie and I'm just like,
it's Pocahontas.
This is Pocahontas and he's John Smith. And Neytiri, I think was her name.
Pocahontas.
Is Pocahontas.
Yeah.
This is literally the same movie.
It is. And it's
the white man is interfering with the minority.
I mean, it was a tribe. It was the best superficial movie you could see.
I think you're right.
Looked great, sounded great. I'm not particularly a fan of 3D. I really think it's actually a cancer on filmmaking. But the 3D was pretty good.
It was immersive.
It was immersive.
I'll give it that.
But 3D. I mean, 3D belongs in the Disney theme parks when like Muppet Vision. That's the most 3D.
Oh, that was
or
great.
Star Tours. That's all I need. That's the best use of 3D because it's just no story, especially a story like that, is going to be able to compete with those visuals, and nor does it necessitate those visuals.
Oh, definitely. I mean, look, the last 3D movie I saw was I saw Star Trek Into Darkness in IMAX 3D. And, I mean, lens flares in your face for 2 hours. I was seriously like, I hope J.J. Abrams Land Rover goes off a cliff, because I'm just thinking, because my eyes are never going to recover from this. Yeah. But the 3D has become so, I mean, they're with the exception of Avatar, which I will give credit, because obviously 3D was incredible. Mm-hmm. The only two movies where I felt the 3D was exceptional over the last few years were How to Train Your Dragon, because I saw that in IMAX 3D, and that was beautiful and immersive.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I do remember that.
And The Avengers, because you felt like you were in the middle of that fight in New York. For that, you know, that final 45-minute battle,
no,
or whatever
to me,
it was.
I don't need that part of the experience, though, because, I mean, with the Avengers, it's like, and I'm a hardcore comic book Marvel guy, and I had no intention of seeing it in 3D, never did see it in 3D. It's the only movie I have seen more than two times in the last 10 years, maybe.
Really? Wow.
And I was just engaged alone, just with Joss's script and the way that the visuals played out in good old fashioned 2D.
Oh, definitely. It didn't. I mean, it didn't need the 3D.
No,
I thought the 3D, the quality 3D was great.
Yeah, yeah.
I will give it credit
for
that.
It's just so unnecessary to me, this whole exercise of having things in 3D.
Oh, it is. I'm not going to go see anything
outside
in 3D.
It's because it's a mere amusement, and you know where you can actually put 3D to use, where it's good and deserved, an amusement park.
Yes.
Don't put it in a movie.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Put it in Disneyland.
I was on the fence about going to see Jurassic Park back when it came out, I think in April.
I did see that in 3D, and that was all right. I mean,
that's what I heard, is that it was all right, because I didn't see Jurassic.
I was just thrilled to see it on the big screen again.
I never saw it in the theater. I'm one of about 10 people who saw Last Action Hero instead, although I stand by my decision because I love Last Action Hero more than I love Jurassic Park.
All right.
And everybody loves Last Action Hero now, no one admitted at the time. But I never saw Jurassic Park in the theater, so that was the only reason I thought about it.
I mean, just the sound alone.
Oh, definitely. And I was really drawn to it, but I thought, I mean, hey, living out here in L.A., going to see a 3D movie, unless you go first thing in the morning, it's like $17. And I thought, yeah, I own the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worth that much. I bought the Jurassic Park box set for like $30.
Like, I get to see this movie on the big screen again in like a full IMAX screen. This legitimizes me spending $30 on a ticket. Just because it's a movie I love so much, and that's so, you know, integral to my childhood. So,
right. But, I mean, yeah, I could justify
but
it.
But it's like, you know,
at
I
the
mean,
point
even,
when it came
even
out.
For, you know, the Avengers or, you know, a Disney movie, like I even saw when they re-released Lion King in 3D. And just to see, like, well, how are they going to do 3D of a 2D movie?
Yeah, that's...
And again, I mean, like well, it's just a cardboard cutout. and so like well, how was the 3D? And it's like, I couldn't really tell you because I didn't really care.
Yeah.
Nor could I tell a fucking difference.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, I've noticed that with plenty of movies in the last couple of years where I just think, oh, didn't have... I mean, I couldn't wait to see Pacific Rim and I went and saw that, but I went and saw it in 2D on a regular screen.
Yeah.
I didn't go see it in IMAX 3D because I thought I also have more of a bias against movies that are, not to say you can't do a good job converting a movie to 3D in post-production.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be lacking something. Yeah, it's not going to be as immersive. And if it's shot like Avatar wasn't in 3D, and like some other movies are, but they're in the minority, it's just not the same to me. I mean, I will admit, though, I am intrigued by seeing Gravity in 3D because of how visual that movie is. Mm-hmm. And also, I love every movie
Alfonso Cuarón does.
Yes. I've seen, I mean, he did the what I regard as the best Harry Potter movie.
Yes, well, and he also did one of my, probably might win my top five movies of all time, is Children of Men.
Oh, that movie. I saw that. I rented that one night.
Insanely good.
I was exhausted by the end. I really felt like I'd been through it.
Oh, my God. That's a fantastic piece of filmmaking.
It really is. And I was just like, this guy's great. And I mean, I see that movie and I think, all right, IMAX probably not, but I thought, consider, and same thing, it was converted in post-production, but I thought, now considering what we're talking about, since it's mainly digital anyway, with the exception of the actors, then I could see them animating it in 3D so that it would be more huge, but I think it would also add to the claustrophobia and kind of raise the emotional stakes watching the movie and kind of get you more invested because you feel like you're in space. Mm-hmm. And you're stuck, so I thought, all right, you know what, I may go see. So that might break my, that might get me off the no 3D high horse,
all right.
But I'm not set on it yet.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
We will see. We will see.
Indeed.
Yes.
But thank you for being here, Ben. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
I'm glad you finally made it over to be on the show.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you,
sir. It was, and you're welcome back, of course. I'd love to have you back on because you and I will easily be able to talk and talk and talk.
Absolutely.
And entertain ourselves if no one else.
Exactly. That's what it's all about, baby.
It is. I do this for me first. If people like it.
This is therapy.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
Just being able to chat. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And if you do like what you hear, folks, don't forget, subscribe on iTunes. The show is coming to various other apps near you. Give the show 5 stars like Ben is going to as soon as he gets home. Check out the show on Facebook. Give it the thumbs up. You can follow the show on Twitter at Cape Pod. You can also email the show at capethepodcast@gmail.com. And let me know what you think. Let me know what you want to hear more of or less of or whatever. Or if you don't want me to have Ben back, then please say so. Because if you don't want to hear from him, then I'll just continue to hang out with him without microphones on.
That reminds me. I'm going to have to write you an email when I get home.
Apparently so. From a newly formed address.
That's right. Dear Mr. Abalo.
I must say, your episode
with I must say, I'm strongly offended by your words about Benjamin Mills. It sounds crazy. I sound like Bert Lahr.
Because you can do those voices? If I had a number, like a toll-free number you could call in and leave feedback, you could totally call. I'd have 18 messages. Like, wow.
how Kevin Pollak would call Larry King as Alan Arkin. Have you heard those stories?
Oh, I've heard that. It's awesome.
Hello, Larry. That guy's an imposter.
Yeah. I don't understand what's going on.
I don't understand.
Or called Paul Reiser once as Peter Falk. I don't know if you ever heard that story.
No.
All right. I'll play it for you when we're done with the show. Here we go, folks. That's the end for now. And as always, check out the only podcast that matters, new every Friday. I told you about that at the top of the show, though. So year 4 is coming. Make sure you check it out and make sure you check out the upcoming re-released hilarious documentary, Running Amok in Boston. That's coming back to youtube.com/theonlypodcast on October 5th. So, until next time, for Ben Mills, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.